You're listening to an official podcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn, preaching God's word to New York's biggest borough.
If you're visiting today, everyone that preaches gets a happy birthday shout out. So, my name is Stephen Aguaya, and I have the privilege of working with the campus ministry here in Brooklyn, and my friends from Baltimore are here, which is great. Very happy to see you guys and have you here in Brooklyn. Please welcome them. They are loud, but you know exactly. It works out. So, continuing with our turning to God theme, I have 27 quick points. Come on now, you know I don't have any points. Turn your Bibles to 2 Kings. 2 Kings, verse 1. 2 Kings, chapter 5. 2 Kings, chapter 5. We're going to read from verse 1. So one of the goals that I have for age 27 is I would like to, this year, plan, and like, not plan like conceptually, but actually like put together the numbers and the dates to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. It's the highest mountain in the continent of Africa. My mom did it. My mom climbed it. My dad tried and failed. I want to go. So I was doing research about, you know, how much it costs, the flights and all of that. And then I was like, you know what? Why not? What about Mount Everest? It can't be like that much. It can't be that hard. So let me tell you what I found out. So Mount Everest, From the bottom to the top is about 30,000 feet of just death rock. There are places on the mountain that the winds are 200 miles an hour, and the temperature is negative 76 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about like a little bit warmer than it gets here for the most part. The youngest person to ever climb it was 13. He did it in 2010. His name was Stephen Aguaya. The oldest person was 80. An 80-year-old man did that a couple years ago. Now, and what's, of course, it's scary. It's a very scary hike. There's been well over 300 deaths on the mountain, and most of those, like in the high 200s of those bodies, are still on the mountain because the hike is so dangerous that it's literally impossible to recover things from that. It's difficult as it is to go by yourself. Bringing a body down is just it's not going to happen. So there's hundreds of bodies still on the mountain, mummified, frozen in the position that they died on the mountain. Some of them so close that where they're standing, or you can see where the end of it, or you can see the next base camp. There are people that, and what's I think the saddest about all of that is that way, way more than half of these deaths happen on the way back. They had made it to the summit, and on the way back, they didn't. Turning to God, walking to Him, is extremely difficult. Don't give up. Do not give up. The year just started. We're just in January. Don't give up. Let's read 2 Kings verse 1, chapter 5, verse 1. Now Naaman was a commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he could cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "By all means, go," the king of Aram replied. "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel also read, "With this letter, I am sending over my servant Naaman to you so you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me. Then Elijah, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message. Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there's a prophet in Israel. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elijah's house. Elijah sent a messenger to say to him, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than the rivers of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned around and went off in his rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you have not done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored, and he became clean like that of a young boy. Incredible story that we have. The books of 1 and 2 Kings are just that. It's a recording of the many kings of Israel, and they blow it. It's a very discouraging read, actually, to read king after king after king constantly turning away from God. And then you have this recording of Elijah's interaction with Naaman. But I think even let's kind of set the characters up here. So you have Naaman. Naaman's a war hero. He's a big deal. He had led the army to many victories. He had abundance of power and control and authority and money, but he also had leprosy. And what that meant was that, I mean, it's a terrible skin condition that would end up, your flesh would rot away, your limbs would fall off, and then towards the back end of it, you would have to live in isolation. So when you found out you had it, it was essentially like, okay, well, the rest of your life is going to be very, very difficult, and you're going to end up having to die by yourself. So he, in the middle of all his victories, must have kind of been feeling this, I just really just want to get better. We're winning battles, but I'm not a fan of where my life is going. And I think before we even get to his interaction with Naaman, there is the first hero of the story in this little girl, who, if I think we just have to give her a lot. I mean, the courage that it took. She was kidnapped by Naaman. She was kidnapped and put and forced into slavery by this guy. And what's her first thought? When she realizes that he's got this debilitating skin condition, there's someone back home, there's a man of God back home who can help you. That bravery to be in a situation where it's not fair, like your life had just been dragged from what was normal, and now you're someone's slave, and your first thought is, how can I help this person? The main point of this story is going to be Naaman not giving up. But this girl could have given up. She could have absolutely said, you know what, it's done for me. I want no parts of anything at all. I have no faith in anything. But she not only has faith in God here, but it's like, well, the same God is speaking through this prophet back home, and he can help fix your issue. So first example here, even when things aren't fair, even when things are stacked up against you and it's not your fault, don't give up, turn to God. And then it takes humility for Naaman to be this big shot, you know, war hero, and then to hear this little girl that he kidnapped is the one to tell him, like, well, I think I have a cure for you. And I think a lot of us may have responded, well, you don't know my situation. Are you a commander of an army? No. Do you have leprosy? No. Then you have disqualified yourself from being able to give me any input on this matter. Can I talk for a little bit? There are amazing mothers, wives, daughters, sisters, incredible women in this room that I think some of the men could learn a thing or two or 20 from. The faith, resilience, grit that it takes to be a female Christian in 2018 means that we're in a room full of miracles, and I think it would do us some good to take notes. Sure, the life experience might be different. Sure, no one will ever understand your situation, but I know about sacrificing everything for the kingdom because of my mom. That's my example. I know about on a daily basis making hard decisions to make sure that people get to know God because of my wife, Hannah. But you don't understand my position. Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe God has put me in a situation in close proximity with these women that I can be more like Jesus, because they are being more like Jesus, even though our life situations are different. Naaman right here is learning from this little girl. Brothers, let's learn. There's walking examples of incredible women of God, the faith that's impossible to explain and describe right here. And not as a look down on yourself, but I just think we're blessed. We are 100% blessed to be in a church of incredible women. And Naaman got to benefit from it, and we get to benefit from that as well. We need to put the machismo away and open our eyes to the reality that there's incredible walking Bible verses all around us right now. Because what will a guy try and do here? How much to get this fixed? That's what Naaman does. All right, okay. So she suggests that I go to this prophet. All right, how much are we talking? How much money do I have to put together to get this fixed? So he puts together. I won't do the quick math. I'll do the quick math. It's a talent of silver is worth about 18 grand. So 10 talents is 180,000. The amount of gold that he brought is close to $2.5 million. Let's assume that the clothes were Gucci. So we're talking like about $3 million worth of stuff that Naaman brings. And Elisha sends a text message to the guy at the front gate. And like, just show him the phone. Just lift up the phone and go wash in the Jordan 7 times. And whatever humility Naaman had brought in just broke. Like, are you kidding me? Do you know who I am? Like, do you know, look at all this Gucci that I brought. Like, what do you, he was looking for, please come do the, I want the fireworks, I want the confetti, I want the trumpets, I want you to wave your hand over the, and that's what I, because do you know who I am? Again, whatever humility he had brought up to that spot just left the room. Now, what does pride have to do with turning to God and not giving up? When you decide to be prideful, you have also decided to forfeit victory, because God opposes the proud, and you cannot win if God is the opposition. So James 4:6. So if you're deciding to be prideful, you are deciding to lose. So you are giving up. By saying, I'm going to be prideful and do things my own way, it's not this like, okay, you're so strong and getting through. No, you've actually surrendered. I'm done. I'm not trying anymore, because you've now taken on God as the enemy when we decide to not be humble. Pride literally took Naaman away from the cure. He had the cure right there. And he's like, you know what? I'm good. I'm all right. It's not the way that I wanted it. And he was initially willing to walk away. I shared the story a couple of years ago. When we were still living in Baltimore, Hannah and I drove. I forgot what it was. We were driving. I think it was. I don't know. We were driving from Baltimore to New York. And I'm very much controlled by my GPS. Whatever my GPS says, that's what I'm going to do. And maybe like more than halfway into the trip, we stopped at a Dunkin' Donuts, and they're like, okay, well, Dunkin' Donuts, now let's go back to my parents. Let's go get to my parents' house. And I put home in the GPS, because, like, home is where I grew up. Home, we're going home. And then Hannah's like, you know, I think we're going the wrong direction. I was like, Hannah, no, I don't. Listen, I'm doing the driving. Just, you know, take a nap. I'll wake up when we get there. And then I'm like starting to see the reverse of everything that I saw like an hour prior. And then we hit the Delaware Bridge after passing the Delaware Bridge. And I was like, you know, maybe we should just go back to our apartment and rest. And then I was literally willing to take that much of an L. Like, okay, let's just go back to our place. Anything to avoid me saying, you know what, you were right. I think it's just a better as a unit for us to take a nap right now. But that's what pride can do. Just like I would rather go back. Naaman was like, I would rather go back. I would rather go uncured than to do something other than what I thought was the plan for me. Pride will make you, like, you will literally walk away from the cure. Again, he wanted the show, he wanted all of that. Because the truth of the matter is, getting better, turning to God, it's going to cost you. Just, you don't get to determine the cost. And we agree with that about normal things. You can't walk into a store and like, I think this is worth $25, I'm gonna give you $25. Good luck. It's not gonna work. Actually, I'll throw out all my Baltimore stories. They made the mistake of putting me in charge of pricing the unpriced items at a yard sale that Baltimore did. They put me in charge of that. So everything that I wanted, I was like, a dollar. I'm confessing, I count this confession. I got a Michael Jordan jersey and a bicycle. The bicycle didn't work. I probably gave like $10, so it's not as bad as $1. But that's an embarrassing story about myself that I'm ashamed of. But in general, it's not up to us to determine the cost of what it takes to turn to God. If he's the location and he's the route and he's the motivation, then he's also the determining factor of how much we have to give. And it's the same for everybody. It's everything. That's the cost. You have to, and you can't, there's no coupon to make that less. There's no Groupon to make that less. There's no payment plan. It's like he sets the cost, and you either say yes or you walk back home. And Naaman was not willing to pay the cost because the Jordan River was disgusting. It was filthy. It wasn't where people went for a washing. It wasn't where people went. You're definitely not going to drink that water. It was gross. But isn't that God? Isn't that just kind of the things that we look at and like, oh, definitely not that. Definitely not that person. Definitely not that situation. And that's, sure, yeah, of course, with our eyes, because we're human, which is less than God. And God sees what we're incapable of seeing. So, like, well, of course it would be the Jordan. But you know what's crazy? You know who got baptized in that river? Jesus. If it was good enough for Jesus to get baptized in here, years, generations later, then I think Naaman needs to kind of, like, bring it back a little bit, like throw his pride away and just do whatever he needs to do here. If Jesus had to humble himself, it logically makes no sense for us to feel entitled to anything. Zero. This plan doesn't make sense for me. Great, sure. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's the plan. Naaman had to wrestle with this. And I think honestly, I feel like the servants, I want to think that they were inspired by this little girl's bravery, and they say, Naaman, if Elisha said, do 1,000 jumping jacks and you would be healed, you would do it, right? Because like you came here to, that's what we came here for. We came here to get rid of this leprosy. So if he said, do something like just crazy, you would, because that's what we're here for, right? So then he's just telling you to go dip yourself in the Jordan. Why not just do that? And we need friends like this in our corner. We need people like this. Sometimes turning to God It means turn into godly people. And we'll pray, God, please give me this answer, that answer, that answer. And then you come to church, are surrounded by people that are godly, giving you input about what you should do. No, I'm waiting for God to make things clear. It's like, okay, all right, how? Other than through his people. And here is an example, because I think I can imagine some of Naaman's maybe co-workers, like, you know what, Naaman, you're right. You should go back and try the better rivers. But these guys are like, no, I think, boss, you know, forgive my forwardness here, but I think you need this. And we need to respond the same when we see people that are turning away from the cure as well. And then he does it. Dips himself one time in the filthy, disgusting Jordan River, comes out, dips himself another time, three times, four times, five, six, seven times in the Jordan River. Because when God says seven, six isn't going to cut it. Now, the water is just disgusting. There's no power in the water. All that's in there is filth and gross, and it's not. The power is in obedience to God. There's nothing special about this water at all. It's just there. It's gross. It's filthy. Naaman is correct in his analysis of the situation. Like, it's filthy water. How's that going to make me better? You're right. It's not the water. Obedience to God is where the magic will happen. If somehow Brooklyn College gives me all sorts of authority to do whatever, and I say, you know, if anyone that went to Brooklyn College, you walk or go in there right now, or anyone at all, walk from here to Brooklyn College by the end of the week, and I will give you a diploma and cover your student loans just like that. Then we go, right? Like, sure, okay, great. See, and then we go, because whatever annoyance the journey is not as, I mean, you forget about that when you get that diploma and the student loans are removed. So when God says, just, you know, do this uncomfortable act of dipping yourself into the, it's not the, like, nothing about walking from here to Brooklyn College earns a diploma. But if the guy in charge says he's going to do it, then you say, okay, thank you, sir, and you do it. So when God says, I need you specifically to do this, sure, it might be challenging. Sure, it might be frustrating. But if God is saying it, it's not because they're worth the same thing. It's because there's magic in obedience to God. There's supernatural magic when we obey God. And that's what the world is trying to steal. That's why, like, marriage counselors in the world are taking biblical concepts, marketing them as this new age, like, oh, look what I figured out. And they're still not getting the results that they're looking for, because it's not obedience to God. It's remixing the original in a way that turns out way worse than the original. They're stealing this stuff because they know that there's something special. Do you realize this? Can you imagine if the government was filled with faithful Christians? I'm a Christians, but actual people that are trying to live. Do you, the changes that would make are just, it's, life would be completely different. Completely different. And it's because it's not these, look how great humans are. It's God can work through ridiculous situations if we just obey him. Naaman's situation was ridiculous. And there was magic in just obeying God. I'm sure there were plenty of other boats when the flood came in Noah's time. Why did Noah survive? Obedience. There's no power in the trumpets that brought down the walls of Jericho. It's just trumpets and screaming. Why did the walls collapse? Obedience. God just like, oh, cool, boom, zap. Oh, great, done, here. Because when you obey his plan, he's going to work. What doctor could Naaman have gone to? None. He probably tried. But obedience to God changed everything. You might be sitting here right now on your sixth dip in the Jordan River. Don't give up. Do not give up. Turn to God. Teens, you are being told to be one thing by your teachers and your classmates and social media, and that thing, it will expire. What God is calling you to be is to be the future leaders of the kingdom. And you might feel like, but I've been coming here all my life, I don't feel that. I don't get it. Sure. Don't give up. Turn to God. You might be right there. You might be one spiritual decision away from your entire life changing. Don't give up. Campus, college students, it's tough. It's very challenging to try and excel academically, figure out networking stuff, figure out what am I going to do with the rest of my life. My parents are telling me that they're expecting this results. I'm broke. I don't have money. There's no money in my bank account. My job isn't paying me enough money. Don't give up. God doesn't ignore you in situations where you feel ignored. Just preparation for something significantly more glorious than this time of frustration. Singles, Edge Ministry, those that are working, like career, your identity is not based in anything other than who God is. Anything. And I know that it's hard to think that when, I mean, just basic surfacey conversations with people, you're telling them this, like, this profile of yourself, and it all seems like, well, that's who you are. Not really. You are owned by God before anything else. And God takes care of what he owns. Marriage is incredible. When we do it God's way, marriage is amazing. And when we don't, it may seem like something that, you know, maybe this isn't for me. And maybe we're too spiritual to actually end the relationship. But you can do that without papers. You can cut people off that you live with. Don't give up. God has given you someone that you're supposed to fight this nonsense of the world with, not each other. Whatever the issue is, it's not bigger than this. It's not more important than this. It can't be. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Don't give up. Single moms, you guys are my hero. I'm not going to explain your situation because who am I? Don't give up. There is a special, special place in heaven for single moms. Don't give up. You know, a couple of years back, I have to talk about other teams because all my teams are doing horrible. I don't know if you guys remember when LeBron won his first championship with Miami. Oh, it was the first, it might have been the second one. And they were losing, and the fans left the building. And, because, you know, yeah, it's like, well, we're losing, I'm trying to beat traffic, let's get out of here. And then, because LeBron is something else, it turned the game around, and then the fans are trying to get back in, but that's not how life works. You can't just walk out and like, oh no, but I'm, no. Like the security very, very much doing their job said, bro, no, you have a phone, watch it on your phone. or just wait for the celebration to come out afterwards. Imagine if one of those people could travel in time to after the finals and then come back and talk to themselves trying to walk out the building. It's like, no, I know it looks crazy. I know this looks really, really bad, but we're gonna win the whole thing. And it's guaranteed because I've seen it. I know it looks, and then if you think of all the situations that you thought you weren't gonna get out of, and you're here, sitting here right now, go back and talk to yourself and just like, hey, listen, I know it looks crazy. I know it looks like I've used up my last, what would you tell yourself? It's like, it's hard, yeah, but we get through this. It may not get better, but we survive and we're here. Don't give up. Turn to God. This is it's my first birthday without my dad. Told me to do whatever I needed to do to get to heaven. Last thing he told me. I can't give up.